This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Welcome to By the Book. I am Sharmila Ganesan, and together with me
is Lee Chui Lin.
Well, this week is leading up to the Hari Raya celebrations, and we thought that it would be a great time to explore books that, I suppose, relate to the themes that we often think about when it comes to this particular holiday. And when Lynn and I talked about it, you know, we started throwing around, I suppose, things like family,
forgiveness,
compassion, and so on. And what we ultimately arrived at was empathy.
Yes, because it is an important element of this time of year, and also one in which, and we've talked about this ad nauseum really, one in which fiction really shines. So yeah, it seemed like a good opportunity to talk about books that, is it the right word to say books that celebrate empathy or books that bring about empathy? I think it's both those things.
Yeah, books that bring about is a good word, I think, because how do you create or teach someone to recognize what empathy even is.
Mm.
And I do think that a lot of that for me came from reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you start putting yourself in the mind of others. I wouldn't say in the shoes, but you put yourself in the mind of others. You understand, when a character does something, why it was that they did it, because you've had 60 pages of motivations, of thoughts. And yeah, I mean, it isn't, of course, only fiction that does this, but fiction especially shines in this area.
I think you can actually make a case that a lot of fiction and nonfiction very much creates empathy, as in all literature, in some way or the other, allows you to put yourself in the place of someone else.
And so this is really just us picking our favorite kids.
Yes.
You know, our favorite kids of the whole library of books that could possibly be doing this. So I think, Sharmila, you can start us off.
So I'm going to pick one book that I read when I was very, very young, because it really was, I think the books that we read when we're young are formative, and we've talked about this before. And this was one of the first books that taught me, I think, really to put myself in the place of another character. It's Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Which is a great book.
And it's the character that I'm talking about is actually the horse, Black Beauty.
With the star.
Yeah, with the star and the one white stocking.
A beautiful horse.
Beauty is as beauty does.
What shall we call him?
Well, decide over tea. Now you really must get out of his hair.
He's as black as ebony. Ebony? Ebony. Sounds like bones.
Let's make it simple. We'll call him Blackbird after your uncle's old horse.
But Blackbird was ugly and mean-tempered. Wait, you've already named him.
Pardon?
Beauty is as beauty does.
That's not a name.
Yes, it is. Beauty. Black Beauty.
A new name, a new home, and a stable full of new horses to meet.
For those of you who haven't read it, it's set in Victorian England when horses were still used to pull taxi cabs. And the story is told from the point of view of the horse, Black Beauty. And it starts from when he's a foal, running through meadows and then taken away from his mother, and basically follows his life as, I suppose, in that tradition of Victorian novels, you know, there are very happy sort of fun things that happen, but then there's also a lot of darkness and a lot of despair. Really, like that book, every time I read it, I cried. I read it multiple times as a kid, all the way up to, I think, my mid-teens. And it never failed to get me.
There are moments of great trauma in that book.
Very much so.
As you would expect from a book about and told by a horse, right?
Yeah.
Because these are animals that I guess we've used for a long time, that have also been a very major part of our lives. And so there's this mixture of moments where Black Beauty is really loved.
Yes.
And feels that love and understands what it is like to be able to receive and reciprocate. And then there's also when the love is taken away, or when he is taken away from that love. And that is just, even thinking about it, it really, and it's interesting because you're a horse.
That's exactly it. So the book anthropomorphizes Black Beauty to the extent that Black Beauty is the narrator. But the horse is not a human character in the book. The horse is a horse.
And not a genius.
And not
sudden,
a
genius. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So what happens to the horse is very much the life of the average animal in that time, and even perhaps still in our time now.
Listening to you talk about Black Beauty actually reminded me of White Fang, which was another book that also tells the story of, it's not a horse in this case. It's a canine character, and it's one of those great adventure stories that also wraps up all these issues surrounding like ideas of morality, mm-hmm. ideas of the pack, ideas of family, and again, it's told from the point of view of the wolf dog in question. And similar to Black Beauty, I cry every time I read White Fang.
So it's interesting, right? Because why would a book about an animal told from the point of view of an animal incite in me, who was a child at that time, feelings of empathy that I think very much shaped how I thought about how we treat other people.
Yeah.
And I think it's primarily because we are put in the position of the character without power. In this case, Black Beauty, who, you know, in that tradition of writing about animals, is positioned as almost flawless, you know, doesn't have a bad bone in his body, basically. And then all these people around him who treat him utterly without empathy, and without care and without concern, even the ones who love him, don't think of him as an equal.
Sure. I think it's quite telling also that this is really a child or young adult book, because that's when you feel most powerless, right? As a child, because people are making decisions for you that you're not a part of. You know,
exactly.
What you eat the next day, where you stay, you know, just a lot of your life is actually entirely shaped by the decisions that mm-hmm. the adults in your life are making. And so I think there's that sense of relation to the story.
Yeah.
So my pick is actually going to be quite different, much more adult. And it is the books of Anthony Bourdain, the late, great Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, what a pick.
When we talked about empathy, I mean, I went to my bookshelves and just had a look and wrote down a bunch that I thought would kind of hit it. But the thing that kept coming up time and time again was how much I have loved and read and reread Anthony Bourdain's books and how much they have taught me about a region in which I live. I mean, so I'm not necessarily talking about Kitchen Confidential, which was his first big hit, which is still such a good read, you know, Don't Order the Fish on Mondays, that kind of thing, spawned off so many quotable quotes. But the ones that I have really enjoyed are A Cook's Tour, primarily, and then things like Medium Raw, collections of his essays, collections of his thoughts and travels and observations. And I just, there are many things that, because he does that stranger in a strange land thing very well, but he never exoticizes, he never others. He's always writing as a curious, polite, interested guest who also writes really beautifully and with tons of personality.
Be open to experience, be willing to try new things, don't have a rigid plan, accept random acts of hospitality without judgment or fear. Don't be afraid to wander, don't be afraid to eat a bad meal. You know, if you don't risk the bad meal, you'll never get the magical one. But I think most important, you know, be humble, be grateful. Be aware of the fact that you are probably the stupidest person in the room, as far as you are the least prepared, least equipped person to know who's really in charge and what's really going on.
Anthony Bourdain taught me how to be a better host and a better guest. And I think this is something that is going to sound kind of basic in many ways, but I grew up in a household where both my parents are pretty much the youngest of their families. Mm-hmm. I never had to host. I've never had the occasion of, you know, having to offer tea to my aunts and uncles because nobody visited us. And so I grew up into not being the best guest. I mean, I was always polite, but if somebody offered me food and I didn't want it, I wasn't raised necessarily to take the food because you're a guest. And so some things, just one huge lesson learned from reading Anthony Bourdain was that. how to be a good guest.
When you said host and guest, I actually thought you first meant host and guest of a radio show.
Sure, right.
And the reason why that actually made absolute sense to me is because one of the things I really love about... So to preface, I haven't read his travel books. I have read Kitchen Confidential, but I've read many of his sort of excerpts and essays that always pop up in these different publications. And the one thing that's always struck me... And that comes back to that journalistic sort of sense, is he never makes himself the story.
Never. Yeah.
And I think that takes empathy. I think realizing that someone else has a story to tell and that you're there to facilitate that, for me, that I can completely get why you would pick, you know, even though it's a left field choice, I completely get why you would pick that, because that's one of the things that I learned. I mean, I started watching Anthony Bourdain before I started working. And that really shaped a lot of the way that I realized when I started meeting people and interviewing them that this is not about me. It's about the person that whose story I'm privileged enough to be able to tell.
And perhaps also because so many of his stories take place over a shared meal. Mm-hmm. And there is a tremendous amount of empathy that goes along with that, right? In actually sitting down family style to a meal, to understanding where this food came from, to understanding where this family sharing this food came from. So much of that is just great storytelling, but also you emerge from it with a sense of empathy for the world around you and a desire to see it. And so, yeah, Anthony Bourdain and his assorted books are my first pick.
Well, speaking of family, we are talking about books that evoke a sense of empathy because it is Raya Week. And so we thought that's a great theme to address the celebration with. You are listening to Buy the Book. We'll be back after a short break on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to Buy the Book with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. We are talking about books that center around the idea of empathy because it is Hari Raya Week this week. And of course, it's a holiday that we often associate with ideas like forgiveness, empathy, family and understanding.
Yes, exactly.
So before the break, we each picked a book. I picked Black Beauty by Anna Sewell and Lin picked Anthony Bourdain's travel books.
Yes, just Anthony Bourdain as a whole, yeah.
I was about to say one and then I realized, no, there are many. So following on that note, I think my second book is also going to be linked quite closely to the idea of a childhood. It is actually a children's book. I didn't read it as a child, however. It's Wonder by R.J. Palacio. It was also made into a movie with Julia Roberts and Owen Wilson a couple of years ago.
My name is Augie Pullman. Next week, I start fifth grade. And since I've never been to real school before, I'm pretty much totally petrified. I know I'm not an ordinary 10-year-old kid. I've had 27 surgeries. They've helped me to breathe, to see, to hear without a hearing aid, but none of them have made me look ordinary.
Look at his face. I've never seen anything that ugly in my life.
If I looked like him, I'd swear I'd put a hood over my face.
I know you don't always like it, but I love it. It's my son's face.
You are not ugly, Augie.
You just have to say that because you're my mom.
Because I'm your mom, it counts the most, because I know you the most.
Children's books, I think, can be very special because they get you at a time when you're open to these ideas. And I think what was beautiful about Wonder was the fact that the author wrote about an issue that can be applied to anyone, really. It's a story of a child with a boy with a severe facial deformity that he was born with. And his transition from being homeschooled into regular school and the different kids that he comes into contact with, and both him learning to sort of fit into this world that he's been largely sheltered from, as well as the people around him, his family, the friends that he meets, learning how to allow him to belong to this world. And it's just beautiful. I mean, I cried, I laughed. And at the end of the book, for a book that's written so simply that it appeals to kids who are aged 11, it is really a book that also leaves you with this huge amount of wanting to do better in terms of including people or thinking of what other people might be going through.
And that's just the very essence of what we're talking about today, right? Because it the thing about empathy is that, of course, it goes both ways.
Yes.
You have to have empathy for one another. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work if only one person is like, oh, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? That's just a toxic relationship. And so hearing you describe the book, which I've not read, as a learning curve and a learning experience on both sides. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound as if there is a sense of deification of the child with the deformity who's trying to fit in, right? And that's important too, that because putting that character as somebody who just has the moral high ground all the time,
yes,
for example, is just another method of distancing them from the main narrative or from everyone else.
No, exactly. And that's exactly what I loved about the book. And in some ways, maybe was a little bit of a little bit of what the movie didn't manage to get, even though the movie is pretty good as well. I loved how, so it has point of view chapters. And so you have Augie, who is the protagonist, the boy, but you also have points of view chapters from a friend he meets in school, from his sister, and so you hear from them how they struggle with like for the sister, for instance, how always having to take a back seat to the younger brother who needs the attention and the care, and what that does to her self-esteem. To the friend who has never had to make a friend who is so different from him, not just inwardly, but outwardly different. And I think that these, rather than take away from Augie's story, actually creates a sense of a fullness to the story that is so important, because you're right that the tendency to want to
put these characters on a pedestal,
yes,
right?
It's put like them on a pedestal and as a result, then make them not human or empathizable at
yes,
all.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's actually why I think it's a great book, both for kids and for adults.
And the title of it again was?
Wonder by RJ Palacio.
Nice. My next and final choice is actually, I don't know why I'm caught up in American Anthonys today, but it's a book that was also written by an Anthony, namely Anthony Doerr, All the Light We Cannot See. It was a Pulitzer Prize winner in 2015, which is not the reason I'm recommending it, but it is, I guess, I'm mentioning it because it was so beautifully written. Mm-hmm. It was just immense. And that's still not the reason I'm recommending it. Instead, it is actually the story of a World War II story. Mm-hmm. And it tells the tale of a blind French girl living in a seaside town with an eccentric uncle during the German occupation, as well as a German boy who is quite isolated from the world and is learning about things and feeling connected by a strange radio show that he catches from time to time that talks about the world and talks about science and that fills him with, well, to quote the previous book, Wonder, you know, it fills him with this idea of what else is there.
In 2004, I came up to New York City, went into Penn Station. The man in front of me started complaining about the reception on his cell phone. We're 80 feet underground. He's bashing on his little device. And I'm thinking, you know, what we've forgotten, what you're forgetting, mister, is that this is a beautiful miracle. You're talking to somebody very far away with this little transmitter and this little receiver in this device. And we're forgetting that all around us, this electromagnetic radiation is carrying messages. And it's kind of an amazing thing. So I started a book, I wanted to try to capture the magic of hearing the voice of a stranger in a little device in your home. Because for the history of humanity, that was a strange thing. I started with a boy trapped somewhere and a girl reading a story to him over a radio.
And it's two separate stories, right? One of someone who is essentially a good-hearted, sweet kid living in the time of Nazi Germany, and the other of an incredibly smart girl who is growing up sight impaired, but who is constantly learning how to solve puzzles because her father leaves her these puzzles every year for her to solve on her birthday. And underneath all of this is an entirely separate story about a jewel heist and how these two characters are involved, how there's a Nazi officer on the hunt for the jewel because he has cancer and believes that this jewel may solve it, may heal him because that's its mystical qualities. All that runs together into one giant narrative, and it is just many things. It is a slender book, but it just accommodates so many different stories. And it was beautiful. I never thought about what it would be like to not have sight in wartime. I mean, and so for nothing else, that was the thing. But also just because each character is fully realized and understandable, even when they're being monstrous.
So I've never read the book, but the thing that strikes me as you're talking about it is how it might sound like creating empathy with in a book is something you need to think about, but it's amazing how so many writers are able to do it within what is essentially a full and extremely complex story. It's not like the empathy is forced. It's written into the very DNA of the story they're trying to tell.
Just to pull it back to an interview we did recently with Yang Zichu, right, yeah, who's author of Ghost Bride and Night Tiger, which you can check out on podcast, by the way. But also, I mean, when we spoke to her, she made a point of saying that her characters are everything, right? Because I kept asking her questions along the lines of, how did you make it so that the white characters, colonizers in the book, would have been sensitive to the locals who would have been right, their servants? Yep. And how did you ensure that? Was that important to you? And she just said she wrote characters and then went on how those characters would behave. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps when we're talking about something like empathy, what we're really talking about is the empathy that we're able to glean from the empathy that the writers have put into their characters. Because if they are able to enervate their characters, if they're able to actually set them out and then give them life, mm-hmm, right, and allow them to do the things that they're going to do in the story, all of that is in and of itself putting yourself in the shoes of another.
No, exactly. And that relates to even what I was trying to say about Wonder, which is that it's not trying to write a character with an aim of reaching a goal. It is writing a character. And that character will tell that story if you allow him or her to do so.
So then just a quick recap of the books that apparently we're recommending you read this Raya week.
Maybe next week.
But based on the theme of being able to empathize with one another, being able to have that feeling and sympathy for one another, our four books are
Black Beauty by Anna Sewell,
Anthony Bourdain's assorted books, but particularly the ones focused on travel,
RJ Palacio's Wonder,
and finally Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See. So those are our books that we think kind of
encapsulate the idea of empathy. That brings us to this week's footnotes,
where we have a pretty interesting story that actually came out in the middle of last month, in which we had, well, our national laureate,
yeah,
Dato' A. Samad Syed, basically saying the nomination of the Malaysian national laureate does not necessarily have to be confined to only Malay writers, which is, on the one hand, you would think common sense, but on the other hand, needs to be said.
I think it's odd, isn't it, that when we think of Sastrawan Negara, we do tend to... We're either given the idea or the general assumption is that it will be someone who is Malay. But there actually is no reason why it has to be that way.
No, not at all. I think perhaps the assumption there comes from the fact that you are... comes from the fact that their works would primarily be in the Malay language.
Yes.
But that, of course, because we all speak Malay as mm-hmm. Malaysians, again, doesn't necessarily have to be the case. But perhaps it's a common misconception, and I can see why it happens, especially when we're talking about not just proficiency, but the poetry of Malay. I think mm-hmm. there is often this idea that sense of being able to write beautifully or creatively in the Malay language is not something that would be had by people who don't constantly live, breathe and write in it.
So it's interesting because this year's nominees or the candidates that have been shortlisted actually includes a non-Malay candidate, and that's Sarawakian novelist Jong Chian Lai, who wrote Ah Fuk. And then alongside him, the other four who have been suggested are Che Shamsuddin Othman or Dinsman, Faizal Tehrani, Azmah Nordin and Latif Moidin. So I think the Pak Samad's opinion comes on the back of that, because it's not very often. In fact, I'm not sure if we've ever had a candidate put forward before who wasn't Malay himself. And Jong Chan Lai actually writes in Malay. So that's an interesting sort of thing to look out for, because they haven't yet announced who this year's Sastra Negara is going to be.
No. Just the other things that Pak Samat also said about who should hold this post, I thought was very sweet. It said the nomination of laureates should be based on merits and the impact that person has on society through their literature and service to society instead of race. And a laureate must be able to influence a new generation of writers, introduce good books to students, and I love this, and of course, they must behave too.
Pak Samat.
Yes, I know, right? But that is... Isn't that kind of the very essence of finding the best person for the job? I mean, that's essentially the sentiment that's being put forth here, I think.
Yeah, in fact, I actually really like what Pak Samat said when he said, we need to get on with the times. And it also brings about the question of the idea of the Sastrawan Negara himself or herself, as the case may be, and what role we see them fulfilling.
So that's where I was going to go, because this idea of the Sastrawan Negara should be of service to society. I love that, because on the one hand, it comes from the belief that literature has a place to improve society, which I believe, and I know you believe, I'm not sure everybody else necessarily holds true to that. But the idea that these works or this person's life's work should be seen as some sort of major contribution to nation building is an interesting one, because I think nation building as a term has gotten a bad rep.
Yes.
It's almost as if everything, you know, it's almost like we're talking about PSAs, right? Which is not the case at all. If you think about writers who represent their country from other nations, there is always that sense of somebody who has managed to capture the spirit and the pulse of a country at specific times, and who also has, contributed as a building block to that country's art and culture.
So I think the difficulty with that is, of course, when you talk about nation building, the question is who is doing the building? So whose idea of the nation is being promoted? And for so long, we have gotten used to the idea that there's only one idea of Malaysia that we should or are allowed to talk about. And Pak Samat Said is probably a great example that it not necessarily be so. He has often been a vocal critic of the past administration. His writings are by no means PSA-like or propagandistic, but they do capture a sort of sense of what Malaysia is, what Malaysia could potentially be. And I think that's what's interesting, because when we hand... this idea of nation building, it is to me honestly one of those things that I often, whenever I hear nation building in relation to the arts,
it's a flinch, right?
Yeah, because I'm like, okay, by whose definition though? And it has that secondary school, you know, like tick all the boxes approach to it sometimes, which I really don't like.
Yes, I fully appreciate that, but I don't think that's what. That I don't think that's the sentiment being put forth here.
Yeah, just by saying that it doesn't have to be a Malay person who has to represent what Malaysian literature means, or who gets to sort of set that tone for others to define what Malaysian literature can be. I think that in itself is a huge step in a direction to say, hey, there are other ideas that can be looked at here.
And I love the fact that we have Pak Samat Said using his platform to make that statement, because it has real weight, it has real heft coming from him. And so, yeah, I read it and I smiled.
And that's it for our show today. We hope that you are in great spirits, because it is the Raya week. We'd like to wish everyone Selamat Hari Raya Aidilfitri.
Yes, I hope you're having the bestest time.
So do let us know if you enjoyed our picks of books this week, or if you have any other thoughts that you'd like to share with us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You've been listening to Buy the Book on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast.
To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.